Great. So good morning. My name is Lorenza Holt, and I'm just here as a community health worker to try to say to you how valuable, as a community health worker, I find our role is just such an effective role. I'm a community health worker. I've been working in the community for 20 years, focusing on helping mothers and babies. But since 2009, I have also been a board member of MACHWA, the Massachusetts Association for Community Health Workers, and it has been just a wonderful experience to be part of MACHWA and to be part of just what's happening with community health workers across the state, and to be able to get out of my little niche and look at community health workers in a broader sense. As Gail already indicated, MACHWA is our association, and we are statewide. We cover all sorts of disciplines, and since 2000, when we were founded, really we have played very pivotal roles in strengthening community health workers in our state to integrate us into the healthcare, public health, and human services workforce. So I call myself a community health worker. I'm a doula, I'm a childbirth educator, and so I promote the concept that we are, many of us, community health workers under one umbrella. So health education specialists, promotoras de salud, we're all under that one umbrella, and I think that that's what gives us a stronger cohesiveness. So how we make a difference has been referenced already, but I think it's important to understand that we are in community and also in the healthcare setting and the agencies that are providing services, that we understand the languages, and when I mean languages, I mean the language of the individual that I am serving, but also the language of the institutions where the people are getting care, that we understand both cultures, and that we really know the services available in our communities so that we can help the individual that we are helping by listening to them and understanding their very specific individual needs. We can really help them access to available services, but also just recognize the barriers that exist. By listening to that individual, we can understand, are they accepting the recommendations from their providers? Do they understand how to take their medication? Do they understand how to access services? I just find that without that role of the community health worker, much could be missed or misunderstood. So as a community health worker, I know that one of my big roles is to facilitate communication and understanding, but from both sides. So how community health workers have ensured success in Massachusetts is, I find we are most helpful when we are part of the outreach team, and to engage in particular the underserved and hard to reach individuals. And so as we get stronger in our training and understanding, if we understand the insurance options, if we understand the application and the process of the application, if we understand the preventive primary care services, if we really understand that other culture, we can really help bridge in very real ways. So I find I always want to put the patient, the mother, in the middle, and if we connect him, her, to a community health worker, then all of the different silos that exist between insurance and healthcare, the doctor, the medications, the language, the whatever, when you attach or include a community health worker as part of the team, a lot of those barriers will, in fact, in my experience, disappear. So I want to just sort of tell you a little bit now about the role of MACHWA in strengthening community health workers. As a statewide organization, we have used focus groups to reach out community health workers across the state so that we can really hear what community health workers have wanted as the workforce and certification and all the things that Gail just described to you. As that has happened, we have wanted to make sure that the voice of community health workers was part of that process. And when we invited community health workers to focus groups, we heard from them that community health workers wanted the professional development. They wanted jobs, their jobs as community health workers to be sustainable. We are looking for insurance reimbursement for our services so that we're not just grant funded, and as that grant ends, our services will also be ending. And we want to gain the respect from the other health and human services providers. We really want to be part of a team because we know that's when we can be most effective. We do attend a lot of trainings, and we want those to be validated. So that's what we heard from community health workers across the state. And also, community health workers said, we want to be credentialed. We want to be certified, but we want that certification to be voluntary, not mandatory. And we wanted the process to be inclusive and not exclusive of community health workers. And what we mean by that is that a community health worker who may not have a lot of education but really knows the community and understands the community can be included in that. The person with low literacy but good heart and hardworking can be included in that process. So when we were talking to community health workers, we were also listening to payers, and they too were very clear in telling us that in order for there to be reimbursement for community health workers, there would have to be a defined scope of practice for community health workers, that we distinguish community health workers from other providers, like social workers, for example, that there was consistent training for community health workers, and that the credentialing process validated core competencies. Insurers wanted to say, if we're reimbursing you, we want to make sure that we are reimbursing for something tangible that we can measure, that we know reflects quality services. So MAHCHWA, over the last 7 years, has been organizing a yearly community health worker advocacy day at the State House, which has been very important because of the legislation that has passed. Without that advocacy, without the presence of community health workers in the halls, I'm not sure how much we would have achieved. So it's been important from that perspective, but also in building consensus, because a lot of the community health workers are invited to walk the halls on that advocacy day, and it's just really wonderful to see how community health workers initially come shy and don't understand what that process is and walk away quite empowered and excited to realize that their voice that actually does count. So in September of 2010, our governor signed into law an act to establish a board of certification for community health workers, and Gail already made mention of this. What I would say to you that's very exciting is that it passed the first session that it was introduced, which is practically unheard of. The board of certification is now meeting, and it started meeting in July of 2012. As Gail said, it's under the auspices of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health Division of Health Professions and Licensure. And of the 11 seats in the Board of Certification, 4 of these belong to community health workers. The meetings have been great. I have loved attending the meetings because they are open to the public. And the way that the meetings are facilitated by the chair, even though the board members are appointed, if we show up to the meeting and we have information that we want to share, our voices are always heard. And so MAHCHWA members, staff, have all been able to be very active and participate in that process. So keeping community health workers involved in the process of certification has been a fundamental goal of us, and so the core competencies and the code of ethics, as these have been drafted, we have facilitated more focus groups across the state, engaging community health workers to give community health workers opportunities to really revise, comment, edit, and build that consensus. The revisions then are brought back to the Board of Certification, and they have been pretty much incorporated. So that's what I have to say. Thank you very much. And thank you.
Thank you all. This was wonderful. I thought it was wonderful. I hope you all did as well. I'd like to open up the floor for questions. I know this gentleman's been waiting patiently. Yeah, let me...
Okay, I'll stand up.
Sorry.
That's okay. No. You know, I think this is obviously a very charged issue, and it continues to be. The entire law is very charged and has been fought every step of the way. We are, though, encouraged that a lot of states are continuing the conversation and the dialogue, and they're coming to the table every day. We're seeing more and more of them come on. So we continue to work with them and want to leave the door open for them to come on board whenever they are ready. Because at the end of the day, you know, the map that we saw earlier about where the states are from an Office of Minority Health perspective, we are very much concerned about the fact that some of the communities of color in a lot of those states who are low income are the ones who are really disproportionately affected by the resistance to the expansion, particularly for African Americans and some of the Hispanic population. So we welcome them and continue to hope that they will move forward with that.
Are there any other questions? Yes. You're asking about the subsidy and
the penalty.
So
the subsidy for those individuals who have incomes up to 400% of the federal poverty level, they are eligible for supports if they're purchasing coverage through the marketplace. So if you are not purchasing coverage in the marketplace, you need to be careful because those subsidies apply to the plans that are offered in the marketplace. For the personal responsibility piece of it, that is for individuals if they have not enrolled in coverage by March 31st, then they will pay a penalty when they file their taxes in 2015.
Yes.
Two questions. One is, are your PowerPoints going to be available? They're not uploaded as handouts currently.
Elaine, could you, about the PowerPoints?
They are now. They are. Okay. They are now. Fabulous. Thank you.
Great.
Secondly, as representing an organization that has been waiting for CAC certification, it's very frustrating. I mean, I sent out for me was a somewhat pleading note to, you know, like jump up and down to try and get recognition. Can you comment on that?
Dr. James, yeah.
No, we have been very pleased by the response to the CACs. There are a number of organizations that have come on board, and we are continuing to sift through all of those applications to get people checked out and enrolled as soon as possible. So please stay tuned, but if you have not heard, I can give you my email address, and we can follow up to make sure that we're sort of where that process is.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's all right.
So if we're in a non-Medicaid expansion state, and we understand that if your person is under 100% of federal poverty level, that they're not eligible to buy into the health insurance marketplace. However, we've received interpretation from legal advice, and someone asked the question, that for not for citizens, but for legally present,
lawfully present, lawfully present individuals are eligible to purchase coverage through the marketplace.
Under 100% of the population.
That I have to double check, but they are eligible to go into the marketplace above that. But I'll have to double check on the.
Yes.
I'll just stand here.
I'll jump in for that one. So the question was asking about young adults, and I think the interesting thing that I've been seeing a lot in the news is that this is the population that has to get enrolled, and rather than calling them young adults, people are calling them young invincibles. And from what we're seeing at Enroll America is that young adults do want health coverage. So I think that there's almost a myth out there that there's a group of people that are the healthy ones that don't want it but need it. And what we're finding is that not only do they need it, but they want it. From a marketing campaign perspective, from an outreach perspective, we know that we're trying to target the groups of people that are more likely to be uninsured than others, and young adults fit solely into that category. There is a ton of work being done by national organizations and by states to reach that population. So the Young Invincibles are a national organization that have been targeting Young Invincibles. And then marketing efforts in a lot of the state-based exchanges are trying to reach that population as well. One thing that we also found from our research, though, is if you take out, whether or not it's an African-American or Latinos or Young Invincibles, there's also categories of people. And one of them is this population that's about 45% of the uninsured that fall into a category of they think it's unnecessary, they're not really interested in it, it's not that important to them. They tend to overwhelmingly be young men. And what we're looking at is who their messengers are. And overwhelmingly, when we said, where are you going for information? They said their moms. We said, well, who do you ask questions from? They said their moms. So there are mama boy category. And we are targeting, we're targeting their mothers. So in order to get those young men, the messaging all targets the mothers rather than the young men. So.
Yes.
No.
Okay, so if and you have insurance or you purchase insurance outside of the marketplace, how do you make sure that's reported? Because we all have to report. Even people who are on Social Security will not shop in the marketplace. So people who have Medicare or people who have Medicare. And so how will they report that?
Right.
Yeah,
so individuals who have incomes above 400%, if they are uninsured, they're still eligible to shop in the marketplace. They just won't receive any of the financial assistance because their income is too high. But they're still able to go into the marketplace and do that. In terms of what's going to happen as to how we're all going to report coverage come next year, when you file your taxes, the IRS on your tax form will have questions about whether or not you have coverage, how long you've had coverage, because the penalty, the payment, personal responsibility payment varies based on how long you've been uninsured. So it's not an automatic if you had a one-month period that you would then pay the penalty, but it varies based on how long you've been uninsured. And also for our very low-income individuals and things, the exemptions, there are exemptions available, hardship exemptions for which those individuals would qualify so that they would not have to pay the payment.
We have time for maybe one more. Yes, sir.
Thank you for that. We are actually, one of the things that we are working on is exactly this, because as I said, the first step is getting coverage. We have a project that we're working on internally in our office that we like to call So You Got Coverage, Now What? And so this is looking at what are the tools that these individuals will need to help navigate the healthcare system to find a personal provider. And we're not using the very specific medical home because of all the requirements that are part of that, but we talk about a usual source of care. So those individuals coming in, we're finding, you know, lessons about prevention. So the uninsured very much know about coverage for when you get sick, but coverage to stay healthy, to get the preventive services, this is not a message that we're finding that the uninsured are familiar with, and I think is an amazing opportunity for the public health educators and community health workers to talk about how do you stay healthy, why it's important to have those preventive services. We also know that this is a population that experiences a lot of barriers, transportation, access to services, and we're looking at how do we help support that. You know, some Medicaid programs do reimburse for transportation, and we've seen some very successful programs who've been able to incorporate that as part of what they're doing. But I think that the networks that we're setting up now to enroll individuals, that these are the same trusted individuals that we, it makes a perfect sense to turn to them, to encourage them to help be that bridge for this community into the healthcare system as we move forward.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you most of all to our speakers. It was wonderful. Can we have a round of applause?